71. Vigil. He bears the weight of God's own divine hatred, separated from the virtues that gave it context. He is what we made him to be, old friend, and that is what he, unfortunately, wished to become.
I was young, Teft said, so I didn't hear much. Kalek, I didn't want to hear much. The things my family did, they weren't the sort of things you want your parents doing, all right? I didn't want to know, so it's not surprising I can't remember.
Sigzil nodded in that mild yet infuriating way of his. The Azish man just knew things, and he made you tell him things, too. Unfair, that was. Terribly. Why did Teft have to end up with him on watch duty? The two sat on rocks near the chasms just east of Dalinar's war camp. A cold wind blew in. High storm tonight.
He'll be back before then. Surely by then.
A Kremling scuttled past. Teft threw a rock at it, driving it toward a nearby crack.
I don't know why you want to hear all of these things anyway. They aren't any use.
Sigzil nodded. Storming foreigner.
All right, fine, Teft said. It was some kind of cult, you see, called the Envisagers. They thought if they could find a way to return the Voidbringers, then the Knights Radiant would return as well. Stupid, right? Only they knew things. Things they shouldn't. Things like what Kaladin can do.
I see this is hard for you, Sigzil said. Want to play another hand of Mitchum to pass the time instead?
You just want my storming spheres, Teft
snapped, wagging his finger at the Azish man.
And don't call it by that name.
Mitchum is the game's actual name.
That's a holy word, and ain't no game named a holy word.
The word isn't holy where it came from, Sigzil said,
obviously annoyed.
We ain't there now, are we? Call it something else.
I thought you'd like it, Sigzil said, picking up the colored rocks that were used in the game.
You bet them in a pile while trying to guess the ones your opponent had hidden.
It's a game of skill, not chance, so it doesn't offend Vorin's sensibilities.
Teft watched him pick up the rocks. Maybe it would be better if he just lost all of his spheres in that storming game. It wasn't good for him to have money again. He couldn't be trusted with money.
They thought, Teft said, that people were more likely to manifest powers if their lives were in danger. So, they'd put lives in danger. Members of their own group, never an innocent outsider, bless the winds, but that was bad enough. I watched people let themselves be pushed off cliffs. Watched them tied in place with a candle slowly burning a rope until it snapped and dropped a rock to crush them. It was bad, Sigzil. Awful. The sort of thing nobody should have to watch. Especially a boy of 6.
So, what did you do?
Sigzil asked softly, pulling tight the string on his little bag of rocks.
Ain't none of your business, Teft said. Don't know why I'm even talking to you.
It's all right, Sigzil said. I can see.
I turned them in, Teft blurted out. To the city lord. He held a trial for them, a big one. Had them all executed in the end. Never did understand that. They were only a danger to themselves. Their punishment for threatening suicide was to be killed. Nonsense, that is. Should have found a way to help them.
Your parents?
Mother died in that rock-string contraption, Teft said. She really believed, Sig, that she had it in her, you know? The powers? That if she were about to die, they'd come out in her and she'd save herself?
And you watched?
Storms, no. You think they'd let her son watch that? Are you mad?
But...
Did watch my father die, though, Teft said, looking out over the plains. Hanged.
He shook his head, digging in his pocket. Where had he put that flask? As he turned, however, he caught sight of that other lad sitting back there, fiddling with his little box as he often did. Renarin.
Taft wasn't one for all that nonsense like Moash had talked about, wanting to overturn Light Eyes. The Almighty had put them in their place, and who had business questioning him? Not Spearman, that's for certain. But, in a way, Prince Renarin was as bad as Moash. Neither one knew their place. A Light Eyes wanting to join Bridge Four was as bad as a Dark Eyes talking stupid and lofty to the king. It didn't fit, even if the other bridgemen seemed to like the lad. And, of course, Moash was one of them now. Storms. Had he left his flask back at the barrack?
"Heads up, Teft," Sigzil said, rising.
Teft turned around and saw men in uniform approaching. He scrambled to his feet, grabbing his spear.
It was Dalinar Kholin, accompanied by several of his light-eyed advisors, along with Dre and Scar from Bridge Four, the day's guards. With Moash promoted away, and Kaladin, well, not there, Teft had taken over daily assignments. Nobody else would storming do it. They said he was in command now. Idiots.
"Bright Lord," Teft said, slapping his chest in salute.
"Adolin told me you men were coming here," the High Prince said. He spared a glance for Prince Renarin, who had also stood and saluted, as if this weren't his own father.
"A rotation, I understand."
"Yes, sir,"
Teft said, looking toward Sigzil. It was a rotation. Teft was just on nearly every shift.
"You really think he's alive out there, soldier?" Dalinar asked.
"He is, sir," Teft said. "It's not about what I or anyone thinks."
"He fell hundreds of feet," Dalinar said.
Teft continued to stand at attention. The High Prince hadn't asked a question, so Teft didn't give a reply. He did have to banish a few terrible images in his head. Kaladin having knocked his head while falling. Kaladin having been crushed by the falling bridge. Kaladin lying with a broken leg, unable to find spheres to heal himself. The fool boy thought he was immortal sometimes. Kalek, they all thought he was.
"He is going to come back, sir," Sigzil said to Dalinar. "He's going to come climbing right up out of that chasm right there. It will be well if we're here to meet him. Uniforms on, spears polished."
"We wait on our own time, sir," Teft said. "Neither of us three are supposed to be anywhere else."
He blushed as soon as he said it, and here he'd been thinking about how Moash talked back to his betters.
"I didn't come to order you away from your chosen task, soldier," Dalinar said. "I came to make certain you were caring for yourselves. No men are to skip meals to wait here, and I don't want you getting any ideas about waiting during a high storm."
Yes, sir," Teft said.
He had used his morning meal break to put in duty here. How had Dalinar known?
"Good luck, soldier,"
Dalinar said, then continued on his way, flanked by attendants, apparently off to inspect the battalion that was nearest to the eastern edge of camp. Soldiers there scurried like kremlings after a storm, carrying supply bags and piling them inside their barracks. The time for Dalinar's full expedition onto the plains was quickly approaching.
"Sir!"
Teft called after the High Prince. Dalinar turned back toward him, his attendants pausing mid-sentence.
"You don't believe us," Teft said. "That he'll come back, I mean."
"He's dead, soldier. But I understand that you need to be here anyway."
The High Prince touched his hand to his shoulder, a salute to the dead, then continued on his way.
Well, Teft supposed that was all right, Dalinar not believing. He'd just be that much more surprised when Kaladin did return.
"High storm tonight,"
Teft thought, settling back down in his rock.
"Come on, lad. What are you doing out there?"
Kaladin felt like one of the 10 fools. Actually, he felt like all of them. 10 times an idiot. But most specifically, Eshu, who spoke of things he did not understand in front of those who did. Navigation this deep in the chasms was hard, but he could usually read directions by the way that the debris was deposited. Water blew in from the east to the west, but then it drained out the other way, so cracks on the walls where debris was smashed in tight usually marked a western direction, but places where debris had been deposited more naturally as water drained, marked where the water had flowed east. His instincts told him which way to go. They'd been wrong. He shouldn't have been so confident. This far from the war camps, the water flows must be different. Annoyed at himself, he left Shallan drawing and walked out a ways.
Syl?
He asked. No response.
Sylfrenna,
he said, louder. He sighed and walked back to Shallan, who knelt on the mossy ground. She'd obviously given up on protecting the once fine dress from stains and rips, drawing on her sketch pad. She was another reason he felt like a fool. He shouldn't let her provoke him so. He could hold in the retorts against other, far more annoying light eyes. Why did he lose control when talking with her? Should have learned my lesson, he thought as she sketched, her expression growing intense. She's won every argument so far, hands down. He leaned against a section of the chasm wall, spear in the crook of his arm, light shining from the spheres tied tightly at his head. He had made invalid assumptions about her, as she had so poignantly noted, again and again. It was like a part of him frantically wanted to dislike her. If only he could find Syl. Everything would be better if he could see her again, if he could know that she was all right. That scream. To distract himself, he moved over to Shallan, then leaned down to see her sketch. Her map was more of a picture, one that looked eerily like the view Kaladin had had nights ago when flying above the shattered plains. "Is all that necessary?" he asked as she shaded in the sides of a plateau.
"Yes."
"But yes." It took longer than he'd have preferred. The sun passed through the crack overhead, vanishing from sight. Already past noon. They had 7 hours until the high storm, assuming the timing prediction was right. Even the best storm wardens got the calculations wrong sometimes. 7 hours. The hike out here, he thought, took about that long. But surely they'd made some progress toward the war camps. They'd been walking all morning. Well, no use rushing, Shallan. He left her to it, walking back along the chasm, looking up at the shape of the rift up above and comparing it to her drawing. From what he could see, her map was dead on. She was drawing, from memory, their entire path as if seen from above, and she did it perfectly. Every little knob and ledge accounted for.
"Stormfather,"
he whispered, jogging back. He'd known she had skill in drawing, but this was something entirely different. Who was this woman? She was still drawing when he arrived. "Your picture is amazingly accurate," he said.
"I may have underplayed my skill a little last night," Shallan said. "I can remember things pretty well, though to be honest I didn't realize how far off our path was until I drew it. A lot of these plateau shapes are unfamiliar to me. We might be into the areas that haven't been mapped yet."
He looked to her. "You remember the shapes of all of the plateaus on the maps?"
Yes.
"That's incredible." She sat back on her knees, holding up her sketch. She brushed aside an unruly lock of red hair.
"Maybe not. Something's very odd here."
"What?"
"I think my sketch must be off."
She stood up, looking troubled.
"I need more information. I'm going to walk around one of the plateaus here."
"All right." She started walking, still focused on her sketch, barely paying attention to where she was going as she stumbled over rocks and sticks. He kept up with ease but didn't bother her as she turned her eyes toward the rift ahead. She walked them all the way around the base of the plateau to their right. It took a painfully long time, even walking quickly. They were losing minutes. Did she know where they were or not?
"Now that plateau,"
she said, pointing to the next wall. She began walking around the base of that plateau.
"Shallan," Kaladin said, "we don't have—" "This is important. So is not getting crushed in a high storm. If we don't find out where we are, we won't ever escape,"
she said, handing him the sheet of paper.
"Wait here. I'll be right back."
She jogged off, skirt swishing. Kaladin stared at the paper, inspecting the path she'd drawn. Though they'd started the morning going the right way, it was as he'd feared. Kaladin had eventually wound them around until they were going directly south again. He'd even somehow turned them back going east for a while. That put them even farther from Delinar's camp than when they'd begun the night before.
Please let her be wrong, he thought, going around the plateau the other direction to meet her halfway. But if she was wrong, they wouldn't know where they were at all. Which option was worse?
He got a short distance down the chasm before freezing. The walls here were scraped free of moss, the debris on the floor pushed around and scratched.
Storms, this was fresh.
Since the last high storm, at least, the chasm fiend had come this way.
Maybe it had gone past on its way farther out into the chasms.
Shallan, distracted and muttering to herself, appeared around the other side of the plateau. She walked, still staring at the sky, muttering to herself.
I know I said that I saw these patterns, but this is too grand a scale for me to know instinctively. You should have said something.
She cut off abruptly, jumping as she saw Kaladin. He found himself narrowing his eyes.
That had sounded like... Don't be silly. She's no warrior.
The Knights Radiant had been soldiers, hadn't they? He didn't really know much about them.
Still, Syl had seen several strange spren about.
Shallan gave a glance to the wall of the chasm and the scrapes.
Is that what I think it is?
Yeah, he said.
Delightful. Here, give me that paper.
He handed it back, and she slipped a pencil out of her sleeve. He gave her the satchel, which she set on the floor, using the stiff side as a place to sketch. She filled in the two plateaus closest to them, the ones she'd walked around to get a full view.
So is your drawing off or not? Kaladin asked.
It's accurate, Shallan said as she drew. It's just strange. From my memory of the maps, this set of plateaus nearest to us should be farther to the north. There is another group of them up there that are exactly the same shape, only mirrored.
You can remember the maps that well?
Yes.
He didn't press further. From what he'd seen, maybe she could do just that. She shook her head.
What are the chances that a series of plateaus would take the exact same shape as those on another part of the plains? Not just one, but an entire sequence.
The plains are symmetrical, Kaladin said.
She froze. How do you know that?
It was a dream. I saw the plateaus arrayed in a wide symmetrical formation.
She looked back at her map, then gasped. She began scribbling notes on the side.
Cymatics.
What?
I know where the Parshendi are. Her eyes widened. And the Oath Gate. The center of the Shattered Plains. I can see it all. I can map almost the entire thing.
He shivered.
You... what?
She looked up sharply, meeting his eyes.
We have to get back.
Yes, I know. The high storm.
More than that, she said, standing. I know too much now to die out here. The Shattered Plains are a pattern. This isn't a natural rock formation.
Her eyes widened further.
At the center of these plains was a city. Something broke it apart. A weapon. Vibrations? Like sand on a plate? An earthquake that could break rock. Stone became sand, and at the blowing of the high storms the cracks full of sand were hollowed out.
Her eyes seemed eerily distant, and Kaladin didn't understand half of what she'd said.
We need to reach the center, Shallan said. I can find it, the heart of these plains, by following the pattern. And there will be... things there.
The secret you're searching for, Kaladin said. What had she said just earlier?
Oathgate?
She blushed deeply.
Let's keep moving. Didn't you mention how little time we had? Honestly, if one of us weren't chatting away all the time and distracting everyone, I'm half certain we'd be back already.
He cocked an eyebrow at her and she grinned, then pointed the direction for them to go.
I'm leading now, by the way.
Probably for the best.
Though, she said, as I consider it might be better to let you lead. That way we might find our way to the center by accident, assuming we don't end up in Aesir.
He gave her a chuckle at that because it seemed the right thing to do. Inside, however, it ripped him apart. He'd failed. The next few hours were excruciating. After walking the length of two plateaus, Shallan had to stop and update her map. It was correct to do so. They couldn't risk getting off track again. It just took so much time. Even moving as quickly as they could between drawing sessions, practically running the entire way, their progress was too slow. Kaladin shuffled from foot to foot, watching the sky as Shallan filled in her map again. She cursed and grumbled, and he noticed her brushing away a drop of sweat that had fallen from her brow onto the increasingly crumpled paper.
"Maybe 4 hours left until the storm," Kaladin thought. "We aren't going to make it."
"I'll try for the scouts again," he said. Shallan nodded. They had entered the territory where Dalinar's pole-wielding scouts watched for new chrysalises. Shouting to them was a slim hope. Even if they were lucky enough to find one of those groups, he doubted they had enough rope handy to reach to the bottom of the chasm. But it was a chance. So he moved away, so as not to disturb her drawing, cupped his mouth and began shouting.
"Hello! Please reply! We're trapped in the chasms! Please reply!"
He walked for a time, shouting, then stopped to listen. Nothing came back. No questioning shouts echoing down from above, no signs of life.
"They've probably all withdrawn into their cubbies by now," Kaladin thought. "They've broken down their watch posts and are waiting for the high storm."
He stared up with frustration at that slot of attenuated sky. So distant. He remembered this feeling, being down here with Teft and the others, longing to climb out and escape the horrible life of a bridgeman. For the 100th time he tried drawing in the stormlight of those spheres. He clutched the sphere until his hand and the glass were sweaty, but the stormlight, the power within, did not flow to him. He couldn't feel the light anymore.
"Syl!"
he yelled, tucking away the sphere, cupping his hands around his mouth.
"Syl! Please! Are you there? Anywhere?"
He trailed off.
"I still don't know," he said more softly. "Is this a punishment, or is it something more? What is wrong?"
No reply. Surely if she were watching him, she wouldn't let him die down here, assuming she could think to notice. He had a horrible image of her riding the winds, mingling with the windspren, having forgotten herself and him, becoming terribly, blissfully ignorant of what she truly was. She'd feared that. She'd been terrified of it. Shallan's boots scratched the ground as she walked up.
"No luck?"
He shook his head.
"Well, onward then."
She took a deep breath.
"Through soreness and exhaustion we go. You wouldn't be willing to carry me a little ways."
He glared at her. She shrugged with a smile.
"Think how grand it would be. I could even get a reed to whip you with. You'd be able to go back and tell all the other guards what an awful person I am. It'll be a wonderful opportunity for griping. No? Well, all right then. Off we go."
"You're a strange woman."
"Thank you."
He fell into step beside her.
"My," she noted, "you've brewed another storm over your head, I see." "I've killed us," he whispered. "I took the lead and I got us lost." "Well, I didn't notice we were going the wrong way either. I wouldn't have done any better.
I should have thought to have you map our progress from the start today. I was too confident."
"It's done," she said. "If I'd been more clear with you about how well I could draw these plateaus, then you'd probably have made better use of my maps. I didn't, and you didn't know. So, here we are. You can't blame yourself for everything, right?"
He walked in silence.
Right?
"It's my fault."
She rolled her eyes exaggeratedly.
"You are really intent on beating yourself up, aren't you?"
His father had said the same thing time and time again. It was who Kaladin was. Did they expect him to change?
"We'll be fine," Shallan said. "You'll see."
That darkened his mood further.
"You still think I'm too optimistic, don't you?"
Shallan said.
"It's not your fault," Kaladin said. "I'd rather be like you. I'd rather not have lived the life I have. I would that the world was only full of people like you, Shallan Devar."
People who don't understand pain.
Oh, all people understand pain, Kaladin said. That's not what I'm talking about. It's
the sorrow, Shallan said softly, of watching a life crumble, of struggling to grab it and hold on, but feeling hope become stringy sinew and blood beneath your fingers as everything collapses.
Yes. The sensation, it's not sorrow, but something deeper, of being broken, of being crushed so often and so hatefully that emotion becomes something you can only wish for. If only you could cry, because then you'd feel something. Instead, you feel nothing. Just haze and smoke inside. Like you're already dead.
He stopped in the chasm. She turned and looked to him.
The crushing guilt, she said, of being powerless, of wishing they'd hurt you instead of those around you, of screaming and scrambling and hating as those you love are ruined, popped like a boil. And you have to watch their joy seeping away while you can't do anything. They break the ones you love and not you. And you plead, can't you just beat me instead?
Yes, he whispered.
Shallan nodded, holding his eyes.
Yes, it would be nice if nobody in the world knew of those things. Kaladin Stormblessed, I agree. With everything I have.
He saw it in her eyes. The anguish, the frustration, the terrible nothing that clawed inside and sought to smother her. She knew it was there inside. She had been broken. Then she smiled. Oh, storms! She smiled anyway. It was the single most beautiful thing he'd seen in his entire life.
How?
He asked. She shrugged lightly.
Helps if you're crazy. Come on. I do believe we're under a slight time constraint.
She started down the chasm. He stood behind, feeling drained, and oddly brightened. He should feel like a fool. He'd done it again. He'd been telling her how easy her life was, while she'd had that hiding inside of her all along. This time, though, he didn't feel like an idiot. He felt like he understood. Something. He didn't know what. The chasm just seemed a little brighter.
Tien always did that to me, he thought, even on the darkest day.
He stood still long enough that frill blooms opened around him, their wide fan-like fronds displaying veined patterns of orange, red, and violet. He eventually jogged after Shallan, shocking the plants closed.
I think, she said, we need to focus on the positive side of being down here in this terrible chasm.
She eyed him. He didn't say anything.
Come on, she said.
I have the sense that it would be better not to encourage you.
What's the fun in that?
Well, we are about to get hit by a high storm's flood.
So our clothing will get washed, she said with a grin. See? Positive.
He snorted.
Ah, that Bridgman grunt dialect again, she noted.
That grunt meant, he said, that at least if the waters come, it will wash away some of your stench.
Huh. Mildly amusing, but no points to you. I already established that you're the malodorous one. Reuse of jokes is strictly forbidden on pain of getting dunked in a high storm.
All right, then, he said. It's a good thing we're down here because I had guard duty tonight. Now I'm going to miss it. That is practically like getting the day off.
To go swimming, no less.
He smiled.
I, she proclaimed, am glad we are down here because the sun is far too bright up above, and it tends to give me a sunburn unless I wear a hat. It is much better to be down in the dank, dark, smelly, moldy, potentially life-threatening depths. No sunburns, just monsters.
I'm glad to be down here, he said, because at least it was me and not one of my men who fell.
She hopped over a puddle, then eyed him.
You're not very good at this.
Sorry. I meant that I'm glad to be down here because when we get out, everyone will cheer me for being a hero for rescuing you.
Better,
Shallan said, except for the fact that I do believe that I am the one rescuing you. He glanced at her map. Point. I, she said, am glad to be down here because I've always wondered what it's like to be a chunk of meat traveling through a digestive system, and these chasms remind me of the intestines. I hope you're not serious.
What?
She looked shocked.
Of course I'm not. You?
You really do try too hard.
It's what keeps me insane.
He scrambled up a large pile of debris, then offered a hand to help her. I, he said, am happy to be here because it reminds me of how lucky I am to be free of Sadius's army.
Ah,
she said, stepping up to the top with him. His light eyes sent us down here to gather, Kaladin said, sliding down the other side, and didn't pay us much at all for the effort.
Tragic.
You could say, he told her as she stepped down off the pile, that we were given only a pittance. He grinned at her. She cocked her head.
Pittance,
he said, gesturing toward the depth of the hole they were in. You know, we're in a pit.
Oh, storms, she said. You don't actually expect that to count. That was terrible.
I know. I'm sorry. My mother would be disappointed.
She didn't like wordplay?
No, she loved it. She'd just be mad I tried to do it when she wasn't around to laugh at me. Shallan smiled, and they continued on, keeping a brisk pace.
I am glad we're down here, she said, because by now Adolin will be worried sick about me, so when we get back he'll be ecstatic. He might even let me kiss him in public.
Adolin. Right. That dampened his mood.
We probably need to stop so I can draw out our map, Shallan said, frowning at the sky, and so that you can yell some more for our potential salvation.
I suppose, he said as she settled down to get out her map. He cupped his hands.
Hey up there! Anyone? We're down here and we're making bad puns. Please save us from ourselves.
Shallan chuckled. Kaladin smiled, then started as he actually heard something echoing back. Was that a voice? Or, wait, a trumping sound, like a horn's call, but overlapping itself. It grew louder, washing over them. Then an enormous, skittering mass of carapace and claws crashed around the corner. Chasm fiend. Kaladin's mind panicked, but his body simply moved. He snatched Shallan by the arm, hauling her to her feet and pulling her into a run. She shouted, dropping her satchel. Kaladin pulled her after him and did not look back. He could feel the thing, too close, the walls of the chasm shaking from its pursuit. Bones, twigs, shell, and plants cracked and snapped. The monster trumped again, a deafening sound. It was almost upon them, storms, but it could move. He'd never have imagined something so large being so quick. There was no distracting it this time. It was almost upon them. He could feel it, right behind... There. He whipped Shallan in front of him and thrust her into a fissure in the wall. As a shadow loomed over him, he threw himself into the fissure, shoving Shallan backward. She grunted as he pressed her against some of the refuse of twigs and leaves that had been packed into this crack by floodwaters. The chasm fell silent. Kaladin could hear only Shallan's panting and his own heartbeat. They'd left most of their spheres on the ground, where Shallan had been preparing to draw. He still had his spear, his improvised lantern. Slowly, Kaladin twisted about, putting his back to Shallan. She held him from behind, and he could feel her tremble. Stormfather. He trembled himself. He twisted his spear to give light, peering out at the chasm. This fissure was shallow, and only a few feet stood between him and the opening. The frail, washed-out light of his diamond spheres twinkled off the wet floor. It illuminated broken frill blooms on the walls and several writhing vines on the ground, severed from their plants. They twisted and flopped like men arching their backs. The chasm fiend. Where was it? Shallan gasped, arms tightening around his waist. He looked up. There, higher up the crack, a large, inhuman eye watched them. He couldn't see the bulk of the chasm fiend's head, just part of the face and jaw with that terrible, glassy, green eye. A large claw slammed against the side of the hole, trying to force its way in, but the crack was too small. The claw dug at the hole, and then the head withdrew. Scraping rock and chitin sounded in the chasm, but the thing didn't go far before stopping. Silence. A steady drip somewhere fell into a pool, but otherwise, silence.
"It's waiting," Shallan whispered, head near his shoulder. "You sound proud of it," Kaladin snapped. "A little."
She paused.
"How long do you suppose until—"
He looked upward, but couldn't see the sky. The crack didn't run all the way up the side of the chasm, and was barely 10 or 15 feet tall. He leaned forward to look at the slot high above, not extending all the way out of the crack, just getting a little closer to the lip so he could see the sky. It was getting dark. Not yet sunset, but getting close.
2 hours, maybe, he said.
A crashing tempest of carapace charged down the chasm. Kaladin jumped back, pressing Shallan against the refuse again as the chasm fiend tried, without success, to get one of its legs into the fissure. The leg was still too large, and though the chasm fiend could shove the tip in toward them, getting close enough to brush Kaladin, it wasn't enough to hurt them. That eye returned, reflecting the image of Kaladin and Shallan, tattered and dirty from their time in the chasm. Kaladin looked less frightened than he felt, staring that thing in the eye, spear held up wardingly. Shallan, rather than looking terrified, seemed fascinated.
"Crazy woman."
The chasm fiend withdrew again. It stopped just down the chasm. He could hear it settling down to watch.
"So,"
Shallan said,
"we wait?"
Sweat trickled down the sides of Kaladin's face. Wait. How long? He could imagine staying in here like a frightened rock bud trapped in its shell until the waters came crashing through the chasms. He'd survived a storm once, barely, and only then with the aid of stormlight. In here it would be far different. The waters would whip them in a surge through the chasms, smashing them into walls, boulders, churning them with the dead until they drowned or ripped limb from limb. It would be a very, very bad way to die. His grip tightened on his spear. He waited, sweating, worrying. The chasm fiend didn't leave. Minutes passed. Finally, Kaladin made his decision. He moved a step forward.
"What are you doing?"
Shallan hissed, sounding terrified. She tried to hold him back.
"When I'm out," he said, "run the other way." "Don't be stupid."
"I'll distract it," he said. "Once you're free, I'll lead it away from you, then escape. We can meet back up."
"Liar,"
she whispered. He twisted about, meeting her eyes.
"You can get back to the war camps on your own," he said. "I can't. You have information that needs to get to Dalinar. I don't. I have combat training. I might be able to get away from the thing after distracting it. You couldn't. If we wait here, we both die. Do you need more logic than that?"
"I hate logic," she whispered. "Always have."
"We don't have time to talk about it," Kaladin said, twisting around, his back to her. "You can't do this." "I can." He took a deep breath.
"Who knows?" he said more softly. "Maybe I'll get in a lucky hit." He reached up and ripped the spheres off his spearhead, then tossed them out into the chasm. He'd need a steadier light.
"Get ready."
"Please," she whispered, sounding more frantic.
"Don't leave me down in these chasms alone."
He smiled wryly. "Is it really this hard for you to let me win one single argument?"
"Yes,"
she said.
"No, I mean, storms. Kaladin, it will kill you."
He gripped his spear. The way things had been going with him lately, perhaps that was what he deserved.
"Apologize to Adolin for me. I actually kind of like him. He's a good man. Not just for light eyes. Just a good person. I've never given him the credit he deserves."
"Kaladin?" "It has to happen, Shallan."
"At least,"
she said, reaching her hand over his shoulder and past his head.
Take this.
Take what?
This,
Shallan said. Then she summoned a shard blade.